This is 91.9 FM in Port Townsend, KPTZ, and this is Attention Please.
May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
May I have your attention, please?
Hot. Cold. Dry. Wet. This week on Attention Please, we're talking to Fire Chief for East Jefferson Fire Rescue, Brett Black. We're also going to speak with Karen Stillwell about cold plunges that she leads on Tuesdays and Thursdays at 5 p.m. and the workshop that she does about once a month on the Wim Hof Method, which is a combination of breathing, yoga, and cold immersion in ice baths. I'm here with East Jefferson Fire Rescue Chief, Brett Black. Brett, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Sure. Thanks for being here. So you're here today to talk about wildfire danger. And my understanding from what you wrote to me recently is that the wildfire danger is going to continue throughout October.
That's the prediction that we're getting from the National Interagency Fire Center in Idaho, where we get a lot of our predictive products for fire weather and what we can expect locally, regionally, and nationwide.
There was a swirl of moisture that came up the coast, I think a residual from Hurricane Hillary that went into the eastern half of Washington State and then up into Alberta and BC. You say there was a secondary threat from that. It didn't put fires out. It caused more?
Or at least more turmoil. Yeah. I was just walking around a thing to talk about that event for the weekend, and I noticed it was sprinkling on us as we're walking around.
Right.
But the forecast by the end of the day is going to change radically, and that's the threat I'm talking about, where the weather changes radically when you have a cold front come in like that. It's a watch-out situation for firefighters on any wildfire, where the wind is going to change and become more turbulent, more unpredictable, and then we have the lightning problem.
Hmm.
And a lot of people think, well, you have a storm or a hurricane or the residual of a hurricane coming in. That's only a good thing, right?
But there's moisture.
It's not enough moisture to be a wetting, soaking rain, and the unfortunate partner in that is the lightning, and that's what is vexing us right now throughout the region.
So this is being recorded on August 25th, which is Friday. It won't air until Labor Day, but I also see, because you brought some visual aids, which are really good for radio. So significant wildfire potential outlook from August of 2022, where our half of the state wasn't as severe. But now for August of 2023, significant wildland fire potential outlook for August of 2023. And the entire northwest of the United States is red.
Yes.
All the way into Montana and all the way down to Nevada.
And that pattern for us, particularly on the west side of the Cascades, is going to persist all the way to the end of October. So although we will experience things like I described a minute ago, where we get little blips of precipitation, it's not enough to change the underlying wildfire threat. And that's why we're going to remain in a higher than average level of threat of wildfire in our region for the next couple months. Right. And that's, it's going to kind of undulate, where we'll have a day or two like this morning, a little bit moist, but not enough moist.
Right.
And then a couple days of super hot with a little wind. We're getting dispatched right now when we went on the air to a burn complaint. Somebody's burning a wood fire out behind their home, and that's not safe.
Not safe right now, everyone. Not safe. Probably to the end of October.
Yes.
This year. Wow, that's extreme. So I see 90% of U.S. wildfires due to factors such as discarded cigarettes, unattended campfires, burning debris, or through equipment malfunctions like utilities negligence or an intentional act. That's not nice. So people can park by the side of the road because they have to pull off the highway. Mm. Their catalytic converter or their muffler sets some grass on fire, and then there's a grass fire.
Yeah, yesterday I drove over to SeaTac to get my wife from the airport, and I saw the typical pattern that we see this time of year along the highway between here and there. About every mile or two, a spot on the side of the highway took off burning, and they had put the fire out. But clearly the fire started right by the road's edge, and it could be something related to the engine, the exhaust that you mentioned. Right. It could also be chains from a trailer not secured, you know, anything that's going to throw a heat source into
the grass. Is it possible that people should just start carrying fire extinguishers in their cars? Like if something like that happens, you can just put it out?
I don't think a fire extinguisher is a bad idea for the vehicle itself, needing, in case it was to catch on fire.
Right.
But a fire extinguisher is not going to be that effective on a wildland fire. And we really, the best thing you could do is call 911 right away and remove yourself from the equation. And not if you get close enough with an extinguisher to a wildland fire, there's enough radiant heat to where you can burn yourself without the flames touching you. And we don't want that.
Oh, okay.
So we want you to step back.
Try not to be a hero. Call 911. Wow. So Beaver Creek, we had a fire there. How long ago was that?
It was a couple of weeks ago. I think it was Beaver Valley. August 1st.
Beaver Valley, not Beaver Creek. My mistake.
There are beavers there somewhere.
Brush fire along the side of Beaver Valley Road. I think I passed by it. I think I was driving down to Port Ludlow the other day, and I saw the scar from that.
Right.
Which went up the hill pretty fast, it looks like.
It did. To quote the incident commander, who's a lifelong native to Jefferson County, he's never seen fire behavior like that here.
Oh.
We had some of those mature conifers there torch from top to bottom. Those are they look like they're rust colored right now,
but
they were actually burning all the way from top to bottom.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And that happened in just a few minutes.
Yeah. And what's interesting about that fire from at least a wildland firefighter, where we have a little more knowledge than the general public, is you don't see that typically with a slope that's facing west. You see that with south and east facing slopes where they're exposed to the sun
more
longer.
And
that's extreme fire behavior. That's the definition of what we call extreme fire behavior, where you have mature trees torching like that.
So everything is dry, even if it's in shadow all day.
Right.
Right now, because there's no moisture out there.
Right. And then on top of that, the other element of extreme fire behavior is spotting, where the fire is throwing embers out in front of the fire, outside the perimeter, and starting new fires. And we also saw that on that fire.
Wow.
It's a lot of work.
Let's talk about evacuation, because people had to be evacuated for the Beaver Valley fire.
Yes. Evacuation is not something we take lightly.
Right.
It's a big deal. To evacuate, to ask somebody to leave their home and, you know, potentially come back to nothing is a hard decision from the incident commander's perspective.
Right.
We struggled with this fire for a couple hours, and we would catch it, and then the wind would change direction or flare up and then push it again away from us. And so this kind of cat and mouse persisted for a while, and then eventually it started moving quicker out of where we weren't catching it any longer, catching up to it. And that, once we had that clarity and then designated the homes threatened, that's when we decided to launch evacuations for that side of the road for about a half mile down, because we knew that the homes in the fire's path, the timber around there is mature, and the flames would be much bigger than what we could control or extinguish when it got to the homes.
So they were in harm's way.
Yep.
So they had to get out. And how long was that evacuation? Did that last?
Just a couple hours. Once we had the fire knocked down, right about the same time we launched the evacuations, we got helitack from DNR, the aircraft, the helicopter, showed up. So they were able to deploy their bucket and get that mobilized pretty quick, right before it was about to go into a huge stand of mature trees. So we literally caught it in the nick of time.
I didn't know a helicopter was involved with that. That's amazing.
Yeah, I was there for probably 3 hours until sunset.
So if people hear a Nixle alert or some other kind of alert that tells them that they should get out if they're in harm's way, they should just go, right?
Yes. We
shouldn't dally, shouldn't grab the photo albums unless they have them in a bag ready to go.
Well, it depends on the level of evacuation. For this scenario, there's three levels. For this scenario, we went straight to level three, which is leave now.
Leave now.
Because the fire was so close to a couple homes.
Yes.
But it's possible you could get a lower level warning with a little bit of time to load up some of those important heirlooms that you just mentioned.
All right. So level one is advisory, monitor local news and media, listen to KPTZ or your Nixle alerts, prepare to evacuate should conditions worsen. Level two is dangerous conditions exist, evacuation is probable. Leave early if you need extra time due to pets, mobility issues, etc.
Yeah, the fundamental thing that we have been having to echo a lot is there's an expectation from the community, not just our community, but in a lot of communities and in other fires that I've studied, that I don't need to leave until my mobile device tells me I need to leave.
Yeah.
And what the message we're trying to spread is we're an under-resourced county in general, not just with fire, but with law and other public agencies. And, you know, we're rural. Our ability to expand and contract to a major incident takes time. It took us, we got assets from DNR, the forest, the park, Kitsap County. We ordered up a strike team from Kitsap County. That took a long time to get here, hours. If this evacuation had happened earlier in the event due to the fire's more rapid growth, it would be a different conversation. We want people to evacuate when they feel threatened.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly when you get a Nixle, but if you are having to ask yourself, should I go or not?
Go.
Just go. And take yourself out of the equation.
Right.
For your own safety, for your family's safety.
Sure.
Have a go bag. That's our other message.
Yeah.
Is, you know, have a small bag in the one of those nice grocery bags in the back of your car.
What do people basically or simply need in a go bag?
Enough to sustain yourself or whoever you're with for a couple hours. Certainly a couple bottles of water, a couple of your favorite granola bars. You know, if you have some really important prescription meds, maybe put a few extra pills in a little Ziploc bag in there.
Right.
To get you by just for a day or two.
Okay.
And then, of course, a face mask is never a bad idea.
Right.
For the smoke.
Right.
And whatever else you think you might need.
Flashlight.
Yep. Flashlight. Battery supply for your phone. Stuff like that.
So a battery backup for your phone in case it dies because your car isn't starting.
That or you just forget. You know, your mind is so, you know, preoccupied with trying to get to the next phase in an evacuation that a lot of people don't think of how much power their phones are using.
We, you know, I use my cell phone, my smartphone all day long for so many things that I very often have to plug it back in by dinner time. And I wonder, gee, should I have a battery backup with me all the time?
And I was at a workshop a couple days ago talking about this incident, and one woman came up to me and she says, I'm going to download all of my personal documents on a thumb drive and put it in my go bag. And I thought, that's a great idea.
That's brilliant.
Because you don't necessarily need access to all that stuff on your phone right away.
Right.
But you get somewhere, you know, you need something, you can at least have it on a thumb drive.
Wow, that makes a lot of sense, actually. Brilliant. What else? I think we've covered most of it. I think the fact that we're still in a really dry season to the end of October is it's been shocking to me just hearing from you about this, because usually the joke is that the day before Labor Day, it starts raining because Labor Day weekend has to be ruined every year in the Northwest. Stops raining on July 5th, starts raining on the Friday or Saturday of Labor Day weekend. But this year has been completely different. 3 months of very dry weather. Now we're going to have another 2 months of it.
Yeah, we may get these little short systems that come in like last night and this morning, but they're not a sustained moisture enough to overwhelm the heat index. And the predictions that the National Interagency Fire Center is putting out for the energy release component, that's a formula that they calculate for the dead grass and brush, is much higher than normal for our region here.
Yeah.
Much higher. So it's going to be a hotter, faster moving fire than we're used to.
Is it smart if people have tall grass that's dry around their house or their property to start to cut it down at this point? Since
it's never too late to take defensive actions, but be smart about it. A week or so ago, we had somebody that was trying to be proactive, like you mentioned, but they were doing it without thinking about the time of day. So it was like late afternoon, hot day, and they did spark a little bit of a grass fire, but they were able to quickly stomp it out. So if you're going to do that, do it in the morning while the air is still moist. That's the best time.
If it has any moisture in it.
Right.
Brett, thank you so much for being here today on Attention Please. I really appreciate it. I hope our listeners will take heed and put together a go bag, listen to alerts, and if you got to get out, get out. It's not worth your life.
Anybody that needs any further information, please go to our website, ejfr.org. We have a lot of resources there.
Absolutely. ejfr.org. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim.
I have with me a local luminary, Karen Stillwell, who teaches the Wim Hof method of breathing and cold immersion. She's also the leader of cold plunges that happen at Fort Worden Beach every Tuesday and Thursday at 5 o'clock. It's like a cold plunge happy hour. She's also a noted yoga instructor. Karen, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jim.
Sure. So tell me, how did you get here? Why are you doing the things that you're doing? Because obviously it's been a road, it's been a journey.
Indeed. Indeed it has. How did I get here? Port Townsend or?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, I've been here about 18 years. Mm-hmm. Moved from Florida, where mm-hmm. I grew up. Florida has warm water, by the way.
Yes.
Yeah. I've and all the places that. I've lived right. in my life are right. warm water places. I've never been a cold water person.
Uh-huh.
But a couple years ago, I went to Hawaii to see some family.
Mm-hmm.
Lo and behold, they are Wim Hof Method practitioners.
Oh.
And so I had heard about Wim Hof. I had heard about his ice baths and whatnot and knew that it was not for me. Clearly.
I just knew it
in my bones. but they encouraged us to give it a go. When I say us, my son and I. And so we did the Wim Hof Method breathing with them, and we went into an ice bath. And it was a watershed moment. I felt so incredible getting out. I was hooked. So we did it again the next day.
Wow.
Moments before we were leaving for the airport.
Wow.
Quite literally.
Uh-huh.
And I just knew that I was onto something. So I started researching and reading all I could. Tried to get a receptacle to put ice in so I could get in.
Mm-hmm.
But then I realized I'm surrounded by year-round cold water.
Cold salt water.
In the Salish Sea.
Yes. Yeah.
Exactly. So I started plunging with some friends. And it was addictive, still is. And we started plunging maybe just a couple times a week, but I wanted more.
Yeah.
I wanted more. So I formed a little morning group, and we started plunging, about 3 to 5 times a week.
Uh-huh.
And then people started getting word of this. They heard about it.
Uh-huh.
So I organized our first community cold plunge was on the winter solstice last year.
Wow.
And it was cold.
Yes, it was.
17 or 18 degrees uh-huh. air temperature.
Yeah.
So the water at 44 felt balmy. And there was snow on the beach. And we went in.
Wow.
And it was phenomenal.
Crazy.
Quite a few people showed up. Probably 25 people showed up.
Uh-huh.
And they all said they wanted to do it more. So I did another community cold plunge on New Year's Day. That was a big one.
Mm-hmm.
Probably 150 people showed up for that.
Yeah.
And we created a Facebook group, Port Townsend Cold Plungers.
Okay.
And started plunging once a month. But that wasn't enough. So I started a few months ago a happy hour cold plunge. That was right. the Tuesday, Thursday.
Right.
And people come every week and they love it. And it's a wonderful group. Sometimes we have upwards of 35 people.
Wow.
And it's a lot of fun. Kids, adults, dogs. I mean,
yeah.
everybody.
Well, I went down to check this out about 2 months ago now, it seems. In the interim, I've been working on a play, and I've gotten COVID and recovered. I still haven't made it back down there, but you do this movement thing beforehand.
Yes.
Now, describe that to our audience and tell us why that's important.
Yes, that is important. It's called the horse stance, and it's one of Wim Hof's favorite ways to warm up when you get out of the water.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that it's so powerful for warming back up is if you can imagine, your feet are wide, your knees are bent, sort of in a wide-legged squat,
uh-huh.
and then you're turning your torso side to side, and you're pushing one arm across the body,
uh-huh.
and then bringing it back to center, and then you push the other arm across the body.
And she's describing it very well, like a yoga instructor would, but also what I'm seeing is something that reminds me a little of Tai Chi.
Yes, yes. This stance has its origins in Tai Chi,
mm-hmm.
indeed. And the reason that Wim Hof has sort of elected this to be the movement, and it doesn't have to be this. It could be
right.
anything
sure.
that warms your body. But
right.
the reason he has chosen this is it uses the largest muscles of the body, muscles of the upper legs and the buttocks.
Right.
And so that helps to warm the cold blood in the limbs.
Mm-hmm.
So when it mixes with the warm blood in the core, it's not such a large temperature drop.
Uh-huh.
What you want to avoid when you go in the cold water is staying too long and not warming up enough, because you will experience something called afterdrop, which just basically means that your overall blood temperature is a little low and you will likely feel tired and not fantastic. And
yeah.
the reason that we're doing the cold plunging is so we feel fabulous and awake yes. and alert and happy.
Right.
There's so many benefits to going in the cold water, but it is advised that you warm up properly when you get out.
So the, I guess the anti-inflammatory thing is what I'm interested in. I've done this thing at home where if I've been in the garden, I've been pulling a lot of weeds all day. My forearms get really sore.
Yeah.
So I'll dip them into ice water in the sink.
Perfect.
I discovered this like 30 years ago. And it's like, I'll just let them be there for as long as I can stand, about a minute, take them out, wait a few minutes, and go back in.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll do that a few times. And then the pain in my forearms and my fingers is gone.
Absolutely.
And it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's amazing. The anti-inflammatory effects of cold water immersion are dramatic.
Mm-hmm.
If you think if you get an injury, you have a swollen ankle or
right.
a sprained elbow, what do?
Ice?
You put ice on it.
Right.
So going into the cold reduces inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
Going into the cold also, your brain is stimulated to produce endorphins, which interestingly is the word endorphin stands for endogenous morphine. It's morphine that you make yourself.
Whoa.
Endogenous means we make it within.
Right.
So when you go into the cold, you're creating your own painkiller.
Wow.
And as well, you release noradrenaline, you release adrenaline, you release dopamine. Your dopamine levels go up 250% from going into the cold, which is remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
It creates a wonderful feeling of awakeness, alertness, happiness. Going into the cold also works your cardiovascular system. So if you can imagine, when you go in the cold water, all of the veins and arteries in your arms and legs constrict,
mm-hmm.
vasoconstriction.
Sure.
And so the reason they're able to vasoconstrict is their muscles in the vessel walls are contracting.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you get out of the cold, the muscles in the vessel walls relax. That's your vasodilation.
Right.
So the muscles in your vessel walls are getting a workout every time you go into the water. Thus, your vascular system becomes more responsive. So your heart doesn't actually have to work as hard to pump blood
wow.
deep into the extremities.
So can it help people with high blood pressure?
Absolutely.
That's wild, because I know exercise does, and I think it works in a similar way.
It does,
yeah.
because going to the cold and exercising, these are both great examples of hormesis. So hormesis is a biological concept whereby a short-term, medium-intensity stressor causes a positive adaptation in the body.
Wow.
And if that stressor was longer-lasting or more intense,
mm-hmm.
it would be detrimental.
Like cause PTSD and
yes,
things like that.
Yes, yes, yeah. or it would cause, for example, hypothermia.
Yeah.
If you're going into the water too long,
yeah,
the
do not jump
cold.
Into the water, the cold water, just without doing anything beforehand to prepare yourself, because that's the kind of thing that's killed kayakers at Lake Crescent, et cetera. Do not do that.
Yeah, we're not talking about jumping in the water. We're
yeah.
talking about slow, deliberate cold water exposure where
mm-hmm.
we walk in calmly and we immerse ourselves to a, you know, up to the necks or up to the
neck,
shoulder.
Yeah.
And we breathe and we're practicing going from that sympathetic state of the nervous system, that fight or flight,
mm-hmm.
into more of a parasympathetic state, that more relaxed rest
uh-huh.
and digest
right.
state. Just huh. jumping into cold water can be very abrupt and it can be dangerous. And
yeah.
I do not advocate for that.
Okay.
But this idea of hormesis, you know, when you exercise, you are putting a stress on the body, a
mm-hmm.
positive stress on the body that causes a positive adaptation. The same is true for cold water immersion. You are putting a small stressor on the body that causes your body to adapt in a positive way.
35 years ago, about 1987, 88, I moved from Boston, where it was miserable, to Seattle in the summertime, where it was glorious. Dry, warm, sunny, all these wonderful things. It was like, wow, did I just wind up in California or Northern California, I guess. The house that we lived in for a time had a view of the Olympic Mountains a small kidney-shaped pool, an in-ground pool, and a sauna. And I would get in there in the wintertime and get all hot in the sauna and then dive into one side of the pool and get myself right out at the other side, steaming in the moonlight. It was fantastic. And that's the kind of sudden thing that you don't recommend, but it's also the kind of thing that I was adapted to when I was 26 years old.
Sure.
It was a lot easier to do back then. But this has always been fascinating to me, the way that cold and hot can help our bodies to heal themselves. You also have workshops in the Wim Hof Method.
I do. I teach monthly workshops in the Wim Hof Method. We've done 3 so far. They've been wonderful. Mm-hmm. People are really interested in the Wim Hof Method. So the Wim Hof Method is not just cold exposure. It's also a particular kind of breath work, mm-hmm. As well as mindset. So it's a 3-pillar system of deliberate cold water immersion, conscious breath work, mm-hmm. and open mindset. My next workshop is coming up on September 23rd.
And if people want to know about you and the Wim Hof Method or yoga classes that you teach as well, how would they get in touch with you?
Well, the best way, you can go to my website, mm-hmm. stillwellyoga.com.
Stillwellyoga.com.
Yep. And I'm also simple enough. I'm also on the socials, Facebook and Instagram under Stillwell Yoga. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Is there anything else you want to share with our listeners about your life here, the Wim Hof Method, or your yoga classes, or just this town in general? Because,
well,
wow, what a town.
What a town, truly. Right? And I have to say, this town has been very interested in the cold water, and they've been showing up in mass. But what's even more striking is how many people have told me how it has benefited their lives. Mm-hmm. How they might have taken a workshop with me, or now they come to a happy hour cold plunge on the Tuesday or Thursday, but now they're incorporating these techniques into their lives on a daily basis.
Oh, wow.
And how great they feel, how they feel more positive, how they feel healthier, how they might not be getting sick as often,
uh-huh.
Just how they feel that they are sort of more excited and have a greater sense of purpose in uh-huh. their life, simply from using the elements of cold and of breath and our mind to change their lives. So it's been really rewarding how many people have come to me and said that this has benefited their lives.
Well, cool. Yeah. And I think more people might be coming to you because recently you were featured in the PT Leader.
Indeed, I was.
Yes. I was like, wow, that's Karen. I know her. What are you doing there, Karen?
Above the fold, no less.
A feature. It's great. Congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
I'm trying to think if there was another question. I had one a minute ago.
Well, you mentioned yoga.
Oh, yes.
You did mention yoga.
Yes.
So, yes, I do teach yoga in Port Townsend. I teach at Madrona Mind Body mm-hmm. on Mondays and Wednesdays, and I'm teaching at Chetsumoka Park on Fridays.
Oh, and what time on Fridays?
Noon.
Oh, noon on
Fridays. That noon hour is a nice hour to be out in the park.
At Chetsumoka. All right.
Yeah, and so yoga is a mind-body practice, just like going in the cold.
Uh-huh.
You know, we use our breath to harness our minds and connect our minds with our bodies, just like going in the water. So mm-hmm. they go well together.
Fantastic.
Cold plunging and yoga. Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks, Karen, for joining us here today on Attention, Please.
Thank you, Jim.
You're welcome. See you around.
I'll see you around.
All right. Bye-bye. Thanks for joining us this week on Attention, Please. My guests have been Chief Brett Black of East Jefferson Fire Rescue and Karen Stillwell, an instructor in the Wim Hof Method and a yoga instructor here in Port Townsend. You can go to stillwellyoga.com to find out more about it. You can reach out to Chief Black by going to ejfr.org. This has been Attention Please. Thanks so much for listening.